I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Me Too movement has focused much needed attention on the problems of sexual assault, intimate partner violence, unwanted and unwelcome touching, dominance and control. Several women said that Joe Biden made them uncomfortable when he moved in on their personal space with a nuzzle, some hair sniffing, a shoulder rub, a hug. Biden appeared on The View recently to try to explain his behavior.
Well, look, I'm really sorry if they, what I did in talking to them, trying to console, that in fact they took it a different way. And it's my responsibility to make sure that I bend over backwards to try to understand how not to do that.
Nancy Pelosi wants you to say, I'm sorry that I invaded your space.
Sorry I invaded your space. I mean, I'm sorry this happened. Yeah. But I'm not sorry in the sense that I think I did anything that was intentionally designed to do anything wrong or be inappropriate. It was inappropriate that I didn't understand, that I assumed. Look, I was, anyway.
It should be said that none of the women made uncomfortable by Biden's behavior has ever claimed he sexually assaulted them. All this got us thinking about good touch and bad touch, how to navigate private and public spaces, especially when touch can be such a powerful and positive form of communication with benefits for the mind and the body. Let me introduce our two guests. Tiffany Field is a developmental psychologist and director of the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine. Tiffany Field, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Also with us is Dr. Keltner, and he's a professor of psychology, co-director of the Greater Good Science Center at the University of California at Berkeley, author of The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Influence, joining us from the Berkeley studios. Dr. Keltner, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's great to be with you, Marty.
Let me begin with Joe Biden, although I do not want to spend the whole hour talking about Joe Biden, but it feels like a good place to start. And I wonder, Tiffany, just listening to that clip, how you interpret what he is trying to say.
Well, I think he's tried to say that he needs to be more careful in his greetings with people and in his support of people. I think he was being apologetic, and I don't know how easy a time he's going to have because he's a very touchy-feely person. I had a long conversation with Jane Pamblin at The Atlantic about this. And basically, after an hour's conversation, we concluded that men just have to be more careful and take more care of looking at cues from other people. And women maybe have to initiate more.
You're a man, Decker. Do men need to be more careful?
Yeah, I was really encouraged with what Biden said. I think, you know, he said that he has to be aware of the fact that other people around him, young women, will take his touch in a different way. And we know from the science of power that when you are in a low power position, you do interpret things a little bit more carefully and accurately. And so, you know, Biden is recognizing that he had biases in there. And I think it's encouraging he said he has to take responsibility, because that is part of the Me Too movement, is to kind of redefine the terms of what's appropriate and inappropriate behavior when it comes to power and gender dynamics.
I mean, touch is...
Well, it is true.
Yeah, go ahead, Tiffany.
The old literature that looked at how people were touching each other noted that there was power difference, that men typically initiated touch, and women were reluctant to touch men. In fact, in nursing homes, men were touched less because the nursing staff was typically women, and they were intimidated by the power. And it seems like in the Me Too movement, people are trying to make it more equal.
Why do men, I'm curious, Tiffany Field, why do men initiate touch more than women?
It wasn't ever established. It was only documented as an observation that men were initiating touch more than women. And this is research that went on 30 years ago. I think that is clearly changed.
It's so interesting to talk about touch because it's both so complicated and also so basic to human human interactions, human development, human happiness. Let's kind of break it down. And Doctor, if I could begin with you. First of all, what has been your interest in touch?
Well, my interest really grew out of, in part, Tiffany Field's research, which really documented how powerful touch is in our social interactions. I really think the touch is maybe the most important language of social connection. You know, we have these amazing hands. We have billions of cells in our skin. And from the first moments of life, soothing and embracing and skin-to-skin contact and playful tickling and the like become the platform of connecting to parents and then friends and partners around us. So it is our medium of social connection. And then as a scientist, I got interested in, can we communicate emotions that are foundational to good relationships, emotions like compassion and gratitude? And we did this really funny study with Matt Hertenstein where, you know, just with a brief touch to a stranger's arm who can't see you, they can tell you're trying to convey gratitude and compassion as well as anger and fear. So there's this big upside that Tiffany's always profiled of how, you know, and we are a touch-deprived culture in some sense, and then we need to return these practices to our friendships and families.
Dr., just a quick follow-up. Do you see then touch as a kind of universal language?
I do. I think that if you were, you know, some of the early studies of human attachment show that there are these kind of basic consoling forms of touch and playful touch and calm, soothing, restful touch and loving touch. So I do think it is this deeply universal form of connection. You see it in primates, too.
Tiffany, you did some really groundbreaking research looking at children in orphanages and touch. What did you find?
Well, basically, these are children that are in the orphanages in Romania, and they fail to thrive. They are half their expected height. They behave in a sort of an autistic way. And, yes, it's real touch deprivation that occurs there. I don't think we see that so much in other situations, though a doctor mentioned monkey data, where no touch, when you put a plexiglass between two monkeys, they can see each other, they can hear each other, they can smell each other, but they can't touch each other. When you release them, they aggress against each other. And I think that from the data we have comparing adolescents in Paris with those in Miami, the kids in both places, they were in a McDonald's restaurant. The Parisian adolescents are all over each other. They touch each other. They have their arms around each other. They hug each other. They're very, very physically affectionate in contrast to those in Miami. And what we noted was that those in Miami were physically and verbally more aggressive than those in Paris. And I think we have so many illustrations in our own society now of what's happening with no touch, the mandate in the school system of no touch. We have yesterday afternoon's shooting as a perfect illustration of what's happening with all these young kids. We've had 42 now school shootings since January. That's 4 months and a half. And it seems that we don't recognize that no touch has very, very dangerous consequences.
You're saying that one of the causes for some of the school shootings is lack of physical contact between, what, teachers and students?
Teachers and students, parents and kids and kids. They're mandated not to touch each other.
I saw a little video, I don't know where it was, of a teacher in a school. It was not in the United States, and all the these were young kids. They looked like they were elementary school kids, and there was several pictures on the door, near the door, where they greeted the teacher, and they could choose a hug, a handshake, a fist bump. I think there were some other choices as well, and I thought it was so interesting that the child got to choose how they wanted to be greeted by that teacher, and if they didn't want any of that stuff, they didn't have to do that. Docker, does that help us sort of understand what we're talking about here?
Oh, it's fundamentally important. You know, and what I like about that example, it reminds me of an experience I had. I talk at schools, and, you know, the administrators come in and say, no touch, and little second graders really want to be hugged by their teacher, right? And the teacher did exactly what you're describing, Marty, which is she, as the parents dropped the kids off at the classroom, she stood outside and she gave them a choice, high five or a hug. And it got the kids calm and oriented towards school. And I think, you know, one of the themes that's coming out of the Me Too movement, and hopefully Biden keeps an eye on this, is choice, right? Right. It's the other person's choice to some people, a subset of them, don't like to be touched, and you have to honor that. Some people love big embraces. So choice honors individual differences, which is great.
And the choice is the, let's call them the hugger, asking the huggy or the potential huggy, can I hug you? Is that what you mean, Dagger?
Yes.
Let me go back to you, Tiffany.
Well, that's
yeah, no, go ahead.
Awkward, I think.
Go ahead.
I know.
That's like asking someone if you can disagree with them.
I think what you
probably really think is that we have to just be more careful taking cues from each other about.
I agree.
Like you said, touch is a real communication, and we know from your research that. We can show support. We can show all kinds of emotions by the way we touch people, and we just have to watch for cues to make sure that we're doing it okay. It can be very, very stress relieving to have someone hug you.
Oh yeah,
we have lots of research that shows that if a couple hug each other before a stressor in an experimental situation, they're heart rate's going to go down, their blood pressure's going to go down, their immune function is even better.
Well, I wonder, Art Dekker, I mean, then what are those cues? If we need to be able to understand each other better, especially in some of these more public spaces, what should we look for?
Well, and you know, Tiffany's right. I mean, if I had my way, I would say let's just touch each other more because it has all these powerful benefits. But in the context that we began the story with of Joe Biden inappropriately touching younger women in more formal work-related contexts, we do have to be sensitive to cues. Things like how close is the person leaning into you, their tone of voice, are they raising their eyebrows as a sign of interest or leaning back? The trouble, and I write about this in the power paradox, and we've known this for a long time, is people in positions of power less sensitive to cues. So, you know, they don't accurately read other people's nervousness. And
right, exactly.
So
that's what he was apologizing about. That's what he said.
Yeah.
I'm not apologizing for touching. I'm just apologizing that I didn't realize that my touching was being offensive. And that's what I heard in his apology.
That's pretty good self-awareness, too. So
I would say it's a start. to add my two cents there. Let's take a very short break. And let me read a couple of comments from our Facebook page. One from Daniel. When in doubt, ask permission. May I offer you a hug? Works great for me. A Facebook comment from Eileen. I don't find it at all creepy. I think this is referring to Joe Biden. I hate that we as a society have become afraid of human touch. That's what we're talking about today on Radio Times with Dekker Keltner. He's a professor of psychology, co-director of the Greater Good Science Center at the University of California, Berkeley. Also with us, Tiffany Field. She's a developmental psychologist and director of the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine. We're going to continue our conversation after this very short break. Here's the phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Dekker Keltner and Tiffany Field about touch, about changing social norms, including the Me Too movement, personal space, and the importance of physical contact to growth, health, and happiness. Tiffany, let me go to you, and I just want to sort of break down, I guess, the biology of touch. And in this case, we're talking about non-sexual touch. We're talking about good touch. How does the body respond to this kind of contact?
Mm-hmm. Well, most of our research has been on the effects of massage therapy and of yoga. And what we found is that when you move the skin, you're stimulating pressure receptors under the skin, which leads to a relaxation of the entire nervous system. So, for example, you get a decrease in heart rate and blood pressure. Your brain waves change in the direction of heightened relaxation. And in turn, what that does is it knocks down the stress hormones like cortisol. Cortisol is the chief culprit hormone in the immune system, so it kills natural killer cells. And we want to survive natural killer cells because natural killer cells kill bacterial, viral, and cancer cells. So there's a long sort of pathway, bioelectric, biochemical, that occurs when we are providing pressure to the skin, when we're moving the skin.
Are we talking oxytocin?
Oxytocin is another thing that increases. Oxytocin, as you know, is a love hormone. Also, we get an increase in serotonin, which is the body's anti-pain and antidepressant chemical, and an increase in dopamine, which is an activating neurotransmitter. So there are a lot of biochemical changes. And another one is a decrease in substance P, with a capital P, that causes pain.
Interesting. Decker, you mentioned some of the research that you've done about the sort of importance of nonverbal communication through touch. And I wonder if you just break that down for us a little bit more about how you conducted this research and what you found. It's
yeah,
very interesting, I have to say. But no, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, they're, you know, building on what Tiffany just said about these soothing kind of affiliative effects at the level of the nervous system via touch, we did a series of studies where we had this crazy paradigm, and I can't believe it worked, which is one person comes to the lab, they stick their arm through this big barrier, another person comes into the lab, all they see on the other side of the barrier is the person's arm, and we give them this list of emotions that are, you know, really important to happiness, physical health, life expectancy, and connection, which is compassion, gratitude, love, and then some negative emotions like anger, fear, sadness, and disgust. They reach over, they just touch the forearm, and then that person who's been touched guesses what emotion was just communicated. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
And
and fascinating, right.
You know, and the person guessing gets it right 60% of the time, wow. You know, which, and chance guessing is 8%. So what that tells us is the language of gratitude and compassion and love in part is through touch. And then building on that, another student of mine, Michael Krauss, who's at Yale now, said maybe that's why teams do well. And, you know, if they're touching and high-fiving and, you know, embracing and the like. So we coded one game of every team in the National Basketball Association, including the Philadelphia 76ers, at the start of a season. Teams touch each other with high fives and flying chest bumps and the like a minute and a half each game. And the more they touched, later in the season, the better they played. So, you know, I share Tiffany's view that we can't over-legalize touch and over-regulate it because it is this basic language of how we get along. As these studies illustrate.
Well, Tiffany, you've done some interesting research having to do with touch. Waitresses being one of them, what did you find?
Well, that actually is very old research from another lab. But, if waitresses touch you, you're more likely to give them a better tip. And if you're someone is asking for money and they touch you, you're more likely to give them money. Those are some very old studies. I enjoyed Docker's research on the NBA, and I wanted to also say that they just coded the Olympics and showed that the most touchy-feely games were men's basketball and women's beach volleyball. And it's interesting that you mentioned that people play better. They have documented that the games are better and the players play better when they have more of these pats on the butt and high fives and so forth.
But aren't all those high fives and pats on the butt the idea, I mean, the expression of you just got the point or we are winning? I mean, is it sort of a self-reinforcing experience?
I think it's happening with losing games, too. I think it's meant to be supportive. And, you know, Docker talks about how expressive touch is. The problem being, though, that it's not practical when you think about we are a no-touch society, and how are we going to communicate our emotions through touch if we're not touching people? Everybody's on cell phones. We've been doing an airport study. And we find that it was supposed to be social interaction, social media. There is no social interaction. It's social media. 98% of people are on their cell phones. Even the little kids are on pads, you know, and so no one's really touching each other.
Whereas before the entrance of cell phones, people were actually touching each other more, Tiffany?
Yes, I think you would see couples, you know, hugging each other, leaning against each other, napping against each other, talking to each other. There was a lot of face-to-face interaction that's just no longer there.
Decker, even going back to the research where you had people that didn't know each other just expressing these emotions through an arm and they couldn't see their face or the rest of their body, were there differences between men and women in terms of understanding some of these emotions?
Well, there are two findings that are really striking that are relevant to Joe Biden and the current Me Too situation. And one is, you know, we had all possible gender combinations in that crazy study with touching a stranger's arm. And what we found is men had real trouble interpreting a woman's expression of anger through touch.
Interesting.
And then, regrettably, women had more trouble detecting a man's expression of kindness and compassion.
Whoa.
So that's very relevant. And the other thing that's interesting is we've also used that paradigm to study individual differences. And what we find is if you're really enthusiastic and warm and affiliative, you tend to see every kind of touch as positive, right? Even fearful touches or disgusting touches. And that may be at play, too, when we think about power dynamics, because power makes you feel kind of euphoric. And you may just see everything as friendly and affiliative when, in fact, it's not.
And if you don't interpret a woman's anger or maybe even no meaning no, that's when some of the trouble can start.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that is, you know, again, I'm with Tiffany. We need more touch in the classroom and on the playground, you know, the good kinds of touch. But this is a place where misinterpretation or I'm not detecting a woman's frustration can be problematic.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Decker Keltner. He's a professor of psychology, co-director of the Greater Good Science Center, and that's at the University of California at Berkeley. He wrote a book called The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Influence. Tiffany Field joining us, and she's a developmental psychologist, also director of the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine. And we are talking about touch, all its ramifications, good touch, bad touch. You can join our conversation. Phone number 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read some more comments. One from Frank. He says, I'm a 64-year-old man and I'm a touchy person. My daughters always tell me it can be perceived as creepy, but I really mean nothing by it. I think it's an age difference. And Tiffany, that's all we have from Frank. But what are your thoughts or even your suggestions to Frank?
Well, I think that he's right that older people are touched less, but they are as deprived as kids who aren't getting touch in school. And I think that's really very sad that people don't like touching older people. I think that he's talking about he is a person, and I think there are personality differences in how much we want to touch and be touched. Extroverted people are noted to touch each other more and to like being touched more than introverted, which may hearken to Joe Biden, who is a very extroverted person. So I think this gentleman who wrote in is probably on that spectrum. Mm. He's an extrovert, and he likes touching, and he likes being touched. But it is very sad that older people are less often touched.
I wonder, too, though, Decker, he's saying, you know, his daughters say that's creepy. I don't know about the people that he touches, whether they think it's creepy or not. But, again, we're back to these cues and how to negotiate some of these of physical contact interactions.
Yeah, and I think that you have to, you know, when I teach this, for example, to people who are really interested in work dynamics, where, you know, I think it's really important for people, A, if someone is saying, hey, that feels a little unusual, to be aware of the context, right? Mm-hmm. So if there are really important power differences, or if you're at work, or if you're with one of your daughter's friends, you want to sort of tailor your touch accordingly. You want to be, you know, Tiffany really brought up a really fundamental point, which is be aware of your own biases. So I like to touch, too. Was raised in a really warm, touching family and am forever grateful for that. But I know that, you know, I had that kind of upbringing. Touch means one thing to me. It might mean something different in Japan or with other kinds of people. So just be awareness is important.
Tiffany, we have a comment from Ellen says, well, I think it's interesting. I think it's too simplistic to say lack of touch causes school shootings. Could you expand on that then?
Well, I alluded to the monkey data, which shows that when they are deprived of touch, they do become extremely aggressive. And in our study in Paris versus Miami, we saw that the Parisians were significantly less physically and verbally aggressive. And the monkeys go on to kill each other. Hmm. I think that kids who are deprived of physical affection, and if we look at the histories of many of the kids that have been basically responsible for school shootings, they have a lack of physical affection in their early background.
Do they have in their background bad touch? And by that, I mean some kind of domestic violence or corporal punishment or abuse at home, which is, of course, the sort of inverse of what we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anything you want to add to that, Decker?
Well, I like Tiffany's statement about school shootings, which is, of course, you know, availability of guns is important and social norms and social media. But we often forget the kind of the social dynamics that give rise to these broader patterns that we should be worried about. You know, and we do know that we're in contexts, in classrooms where kids are touched more, they feel safer, they work harder on math problems. So I think it is really worth thinking about, you know, what sort of social processes should we be encouraging that may calm classrooms down and prevent these kind of events. And I would put my money on touch as one of them.
Right. I mean, obviously, the concern is that a teacher could be a closet pedophile. And obviously, we do not want that to happen to young children. Go ahead, Tiffany.
It's interesting, Marty, because the actual abuse rate has increased even despite the mandate against touching in school systems. So it's not that we alleviated what we were intending to do. I think it's a definite problem, and it doesn't happen in private schools, but it does happen in public schools. The director of the National Education Association has made it very clear: we don't touch. We teach. We don't touch, and schools have taken that very seriously.
Let me get. Looks like Darlene from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Darlene, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I just wanted to kind of go back to the power dynamic between men and women in this age of the Me Too movement.
Sure.
And I have two daughters, 15 and 12, and I think about, you know, how do I empower them to, you know, freely and unashamedly express how they feel about things? So if somebody is, you know, hugging on them or touching them and they don't want it, to freely say, you know, I'm not into that, or, you know, that's not my thing, so that, you know, you don't have to rely as much on figuring out cues that women, girls can, you know, take their power and say, I don't like that, don't do that, you know, or if they're okay with it, you know, go ahead and hug them back.
I hear you, Darlene.
Or touch them.
Sure. Yeah. No, I appreciate it. I'm glad you raised that. Let me give Decker Kilner a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, you know, and this is one of the most important things that's come out of the Me Too movement, which is, you know, now with teens and young women, there is the, you know, is this okay? There's consent, and that's a critical concept that Darlene is referring to. Mm-hmm. When you get to work, my teaching of 25 years suggests that most touch is really fun and builds team camaraderie at work, but there is a subset that's problematic. And what the experts say is, you know, just put it on record if you feel it's inappropriate. Just say, hey, you know, that was a little too long of a hug, and you let them know. And so I think that we're getting wiser, and I hope that we learn how to reintegrate the positive forms of touch back to these contexts.
Tiffany, anything you want to add to that?
There's a guy who wrote a book on 365 hugs. 365 ways to hug. And when talking to him, he made the comment that we're doing more A-frame hugging, meaning we just put our arms around each other's shoulders and our bodies are, we look like an A-frame. And I think, you know, that's fine. There's still some good stimulation there that feels good and that makes us feel like we're being supported. I agree that what Darlene said about telling her daughters that they should just be empowered to say, no, listen, I don't like being touched.
Sure.
I think it's always better to say, I don't like being touched or this doesn't feel good to me than to put it on the other person. You shouldn't be doing this. It's too insulting to someone who's being a huggy feely person to be accused of being a bad person because he's done the wrong thing. And so I think it's good to say, you know, that makes me uncomfortable. I don't like that. Please don't do that.
Yeah, fair enough. Are you calling Tiffany Romas? I'm going to break here, but then for instead of the A-frame hug, a full body hug?
No, it's just you're standing out. Your feet are like the bottom of a triangle,
right?
And you're kind of putting your arms around someone's shoulders, but the rest of your body is away from that person.
Well, we're talking about human contact in this hour of Radio Times. So let me read one more comment from our Facebook page. This is from Edie. I'm a consent educator who works as a therapist and teaches workshops on consent. Only a verbal yes means yes, maybe means no, no means no. Pretty simple. Well, let's take a short break and we'll get back to our conversation with Tiffany Field. She's a developmental psychologist, director of the Touch Research Institute, and that's at the University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine. Dr. Keltner is a professor of psychology, co-director of the Greater Good Science Center at the University of California at Berkeley, wrote a book called The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Influence. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Email radiotimes at whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Decker Keltner and Tiffany Field about touch in all its many forms. Let me just broaden our conversation, Decker, and go to you and talk about personal space. I posted something, a famous scene from Seinfeld about the close talker, you know, that person that moves in on you and they're about 2 inches from your nose talking to you, especially if it's a stranger, does not feel good. Help us understand about what personal space means and how we can navigate that.
Yeah, so, you know, there's this remarkable new research, part of it coming out of UC Berkeley, that, you know, the brain keeps track. There are little parts of your brain that are keeping track of, like, how close am I to people. And as you get too close, it starts to signal that this is an intimate encounter and other parts of the brain are activated. So it tells us that you know, the distance that you experience between people is just a fundamental part of our sense of friendship and affiliation. And cultures really vary dramatically. So I've done a lot of work with Brazilians. They're very warm and expressive, touching each other all the time. And they believe you should be 3 inches away from each other just as a normal setting.
Close talkers, right?
And then, you know, you go to the UK and you're like 4 feet away, and I'm exaggerating. But, you know, again, this is a lesson in just being aware and sensitive to who am I with, what's my context, and adapting accordingly. So personal space, or what we call proximics, is just a fundamental dimension of how close we are.
Do you think it's based to some degree on evolution, in that if we don't know people that well, or we don't know people at all, we want to keep them a little distant in case we have to run from them?
Yeah, I think one of the basic distinctions we make is friend and foe, right? Or in my tribe or not in my tribe. And what that early research is telling us is the brain is kind of saying, there's my boundary for the potential foes. Let's keep them out there. And then here are all the people that are my offspring or romantic partners or friends that I can move past that boundary. And it is a deep evolutionary development in our way of looking at the social world.
Tiffany, both you and Decker have said that Americans are, if not touch deprived, we don't touch as much as a lot of other countries. Does that come from our Calvinist background, or is there something uniquely American about that?
Well, I think that, you know, I would add to doctor's point about evolution. There's certainly a developmental effects, and like you said, very strong cultural differences. I think we don't carry our babies around as much as other cultures do, so we don't get as much touch from very early in development. There's a great illustration in New Guinea of two tribes that, that live next to each other. And one is the Mundugamore, who have very little physical affection in their early upbringing. And they are headhunters. And right next door is a village of Arapesh, who are receiving lots of affection as infants and are carried around a lot. And they're affectionate adults. So I think that that those culture contrasts really highlight how important the early early touch experiences and how that contributes to how much space we're going to keep in Americans being different from the Brazilians and from the French and so forth. There was an old study that was done in cafes, and they showed the British being touched like once every 30 minutes. In contrast to the Parisians, who are touched 30 times in 30 minutes.
So, yeah. Vive la France, I say.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Let me get Patrick from Pennsylvania to join our conversation. And Patrick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I did a TEDx on the beauty of touch, and I used Tiffany as part of my research for
that. Excellent.
And, you know, My talk actually started off being why having your hair done feels so good, because I realized that most of my guests would come in. A lot of times we have people who live alone today. We have people who work alone. And you can't ask somebody for a hug or somebody to hold your hand. And so it's important to get touched, because we if we don't have it, bad things start happening to us. But when we do need it, where can we find it? And well, the beauty industry offers a great opportunity, because people can come in and get their massage done, get their nails done, get their hair washed, and get that important touch that they need to have the psychological effects that we aren't getting today from living alone.
Patrick, that's a really excellent point. We'll give Tiffany Field a chance to respond to that. And we do know that we confess everything to our hairdresser, but maybe there's a connection there. Tiffany, you want to weigh in on that?
I think that's a very, very strong point. And that may be the reason that cuddling groups and cuddling shops are creeping up everywhere, Australia, New Zealand, Great Britain. It's interesting, though, that they're all seeming to crop up in English-speaking cultures, which takes us back to your point, Marty, that why are we, you know, our English-speaking culture so non-touch-oriented?
And a cuddle shop, how does that work?
Well, you pay a dollar a minute, and someone cuddles you.
I mean, holds you, hugs you.
I personally would rather go to a massage therapist.
Me too.
I understand a lot of people are doing that. And the cuddling groups are even, they seem even stranger to me. You go in, and you're with a bunch of strangers, and you're in your pajamas. And the lights are off, but there are rules that you can't be, you cannot be sexually intimate. And everybody hugs, so you're hugging total strangers. Being hugged by total strangers.
Does that make sense to you, Decker?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, there's this whole new interest in the tingles you get in interesting contexts, ASMR. And people do get it with haircuts and pedicures and the like. And it is this sense of connecting. I remember, to Patrick's point, and why we crave touch as an illustration of that, my daughters were like 9 and 7, and I wrote about this in Born to Be Good, where I have a chapter on touch. And they went to a pedicure. Mom was giving them a treat end of school year. They came back. I was like, what was it like to get your feet done? I've never done it.
Yeah.
And they said, well, I got my toes done. But I got this massage on my toes. And it gave me this tingle. And that was the real reason that they loved it. So I think Tiffany's work tells us we're going to recreate ways to build touch back in our society through cuddle groups. And there's cuddle therapy now, where you can just, a therapist just cuddles you, and basketball. So We're pretty inventive in creating this basic thing.
Well, that's good to know. Patrick, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me read a couple of more comments. We've got some more callers as well. A comment from Julia on our Facebook page. Touch is great with people we know and are intimate with. It isn't welcome from everyone and shouldn't be assumed so. A Facebook comment from Jane. For nonverbal folks like my grandson, for a couple of years, read body language and don't force. And it does raise questions, I guess. I mean, for some people, touch does not feel good. And maybe it's someone who might be on the spectrum and, you know, touch is a different kind of experience. Or even, Tiffany, for someone who has been sexually assaulted, touch is going to be a much more complicated and perhaps even more difficult thing for someone to try to understand and navigate.
Yes, you're exactly right. However, I think it's that people are uncomfortable with unpredictable touch because we have done several studies on children with autism and on sexually abused women, giving them massage. We thought they would be very averse to that kind of touch, and they loved it and thrived on it. So I think a lot of the touch in our social communications is uncomfortable for some people because they find it unpredictable. They don't know, like one of your callers suggested that, you know, you get closer than 4 inches and, you know, then you think someone's going to be sexually intimate with you.
So if you explain it to say, this is what I'm going to do, that helps someone who might feel some degree of trauma about touch, makes them feel better, Tiffany?
Yeah, I think that they see, we demonstrate that we're going to be massaging them. And, with the kids, we basically do back rubs because kids are a little reluctant to have the rest of their bodies being massaged. With the autistic kids and with the sexually abused women, they love the pressure from the massage, even though they were still reluctant to be touched in social ways.
That's really fascinating. Let me get Jack from Philadelphia to join us. And Jack, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. Go ahead, Jack.
Hey, Marty. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just want to say you're one of my favorites, man. Oh, I'm the last guy in the world you would think would listen to this, but I love it.
You go, Jack. Thanks.
All right. Anyway, I just wanted to bring up, and I'm sure we've all seen it, and this is not a sexist statement, but coworkers, girls in high school, younger than that, I see them time and time again. They could be complete strangers, and they touch each other immediately. Oh, let me see that ring. Let me touch your ears and look at your earring. Let me play with your hair. Oh, wow, your hair looks cool. And they just touch it. There's never any asking. I know there's a power dynamic going on over there because it's just, you know, female and female. But at the same time, that does send mixed messages to men saying, oh, well, Sarah just touched Ashley. Maybe I can touch Ashley. But then you touch Ashley, and it's a huge deal.
I hear you, Jack. No, I think it's a great question, and I'm going to toss that to you, Decker.
Well, within gender dynamics are really different than between gender dynamics for a lot of deep reasons, and I think that's why consent is still important in the between gender dynamics when a young guy's interested in touching a young girl, because they're just different interactions in so many ways.
Do you agree with that, Tiffany?
Yes, very definitely.
Jack, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Lisa from Westchester has to say. And Lisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. I've been an educator for over 20 years, secondary ed, but now higher ed. And I'm a hugger, and I came from a family of huggers, and found that I had to, you know, monitor my behavior as an educator, certainly, but also among colleagues and in general. And so recently, in the past couple of years, especially with the Me Too movement, and I've always been conscious of those issues and concerns, but more conscious as the culture has become more conscious, is to say to a person, you know, can I give you a hug? If we're standing there and I just met them, I wouldn't do that. But if I know them and haven't seen them in, you know, a couple of days or so, oh, can I give you a hug? I don't automatically hug anymore. And at first it made me sad, and now what it did, it seems to do, is open up the conversation, and I've had positive responses. With my students, I don't ask and I don't hug. It's really quite simple. but even in higher ed. I've had students say to me, oh, can I hug you? And I'm like, if we're in public and there's other people, I look around and I say, I don't know, do we have witnesses? I mean, that's a reflex.
Sure. No, I hear
but,
you. No,
I... But among colleagues, it's been important to ask and in general to ask. So that's what I wanted to share.
I'm glad you did, Lisa. Thanks for calling in to Radio Times. Tiffany, anything you want to say back to Lisa?
Well, I don't know. I find it awkward to ask permission to do that, but I sort of take my cues from what's happening in the rest of the group. And like Docker said, if you're with Brazilians, you know, you can feel very, very easy about hugging them.
But in America, not so much, it sounds.
Not so much. Mm-hmm.
Here's an email from Sharon. I'm a woman, but I'm fairly friendly, touchy-feely person. In my experience, too many men have interpreted this as hitting on them in a way that makes me reluctant to do so. And Dacher, this is back to the, you know, to the cues and the complex relationships between, in this case, men and women.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Lisa's comment and Sharon's comment tell us where we're going as a culture, which is there is more touch in the workplace despite these, you know, these claims to not touch. And I think that if we're just clear with our words and, you know, and we risk being misinterpreted, we can, someone like Sharon can make sure to say, hey, you know, I meant that as a friendly gesture and not as a sexual overture, not an intimate overture. And I think we'll fare better.
Marco says, I teach children's martial arts, and this obviously involves a lot of touching, and I see how much children enjoy this very physical activity, so it's very important. Tiffany, that speaks to, I think, what you were talking about earlier.
Yes, I agree with Marco. I think that, they need to be touched. I think that what's going to happen is men are just going to be more careful and take look for cues, and women are just going to have to initiate more.
And that's not a bad thing, is it?
If they want to be touched.
Right. No. I mean, that seems like if we could all learn from that, it seems I think we would all be in a better place. Let me read one more comment. Actually, Chris has a question that I had as well. What are the benefits of petting our pets? Does this have the same calming effects? Dacher, have you looked at that?
I haven't. I'll bet you Tiffany knows because I don't know those findings, but I think they're out there.
Do you know, Tiffany?
Well, it's called T-Touch. And you make a circle, like you go from 12 to 9. And it's done with horses, and it's done with dogs. There's a lot of research out there on touching your animals. And one of the things that we found, not with the animals, but the massager benefits as much as the massagee. Because they're stimulating pressure receptors in their hands. So if you're massaging your pet, you're going to feel the stress-relieving effects because you're providing pressure to the animal. And the animal, of course, is going to love it because the animal is getting the same benefits that you get if a massage therapist was massaging a dog, for example. So, I think pets, we have there's a lot of data out there that people live longer if they have pets.
Well, we always like talking about pets on Radio Times. Tiffany Field, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's a developmental psychologist, director of the Touch Research Institute, and that's at the University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine. Dacher Keltner, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And he's a professor of psychology, co-director of the Greater Good Science Center at the University of California at Berkeley. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. Got lots of podcasts there for you. You can also join our Facebook page as well. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.